Chapter 5. I was ready to go home already, but the bodies of the three elven soldiers were a bit of a problem. It seemed like a bad idea to leave them out in the open for anyone to find, so Amriel and I dragged them a little way from the game trail and laid them behind an outcropping of rock. The bodies by no means were well hidden, but someone would have to put in an effort to find them at least. As I dragged the one with the red mohawk over to where we'd laid the other two Yenny guards, I thought about the fireballs the Night Elf had conjured out of thin air. Did you see what this guy did? I asked the horned woman, who was kicking the limbs of the other two guards so they wouldn't be seen behind the outcropping.
The sorcerer?
She replied with a final kick for spite.
Yeah. It was good you took him out as quickly as you did. He could have been a real problem.
I knew magic existed down in the gloom. I'd watched Amriela cave in a tunnel as baby giant spiders chased us, just by using the power of her magically amplified voice. It was the kind of thing your mind doesn't accept right away the first time you see it, but at least the red-skinned knockout was on my side. The idea that there were people in the gloom under the control of Ursinger who could summon fire from nothing was kind of terrifying. Is making fire with nothing but their hands a common thing for night elves to do? I asked as I heaved Mohawk's body onto the others.
Sorcerers,
Amriela said with a chuckle.
They're not terribly common. Conjuring or any act of magic takes a lot out of an individual, but conjuring especially. Not many are willing to dedicate their lives to a pursuit that can kill you for potentially limited results.
But you used magic to help us get away from those spiders, I reminded her. You must not think it's all useless.
I'm Zenkari,
my companion countered with a fox-like grin.
For us, a little magic comes naturally. Though using it still requires an exchange of energy, so I try not to use it too often.
I took one last look at the limp bodies behind the outcropping. It wasn't a perfect job, but at least they wouldn't be easily seen from the game trail. That's good enough, I said as I readjusted the Galil on my shoulder. Let's head back to the surface. The red-skinned woman and I started the long trek back through the mushroom forest and headed north to the Great Forest. But we avoided any main paths and trails to cut down on the possibility of running into any more Yenny guards patrolling the region in great numbers. When Amriel and I reached the edges of the subterranean forest, we skirted along its edge rather than traveling straight through. It added 2 hours of walking to our trip back to the surface, but it saved us some time dodging or fighting Ursinger's men. One day, not too long from now, I knew we'd have to fight Ursinger and his seemingly countless soldiers. But I wanted to be the one who picked when and where that would happen. Picking off a few soldiers here and now would have been satisfying, but it would also draw Ursinger's attention to the forest even more. I wanted the Mad Chief to wonder where I was and when I might strike next. He would have to divide his forces to cover as much ground as possible. Once I alerted him to the areas of the gloom I frequented, he would be able to consolidate his forces and bring his strength of numbers to bear. So, I wanted to keep him in the dark, figuratively, for as long as possible. Eventually, we got back to the iron door, and I took out my key and placed it in the crack in the stone wall. The huge door magically swung open on creaking hinges, and the Zenkari woman and I walked through before the door closed itself again. Then, I turned my headlamp on, and Amriela moved behind me to be out of the direct glare of the light. As we came to the cave where I'd found the skeletal remains of a Nyctor, a thought occurred to me, and I looked around the circular chamber. Maybe it's time we find out where some of these other tunnels go, I said as I looked at the two side passages on either side of the tunnels we'd just come up through. We've only ever been down this center passage. The other two might also lead to the gloom, and it'd be good to know if they're also protected by iron doors or something similar.
The lost dwarves would have been thorough,
Amriela replied as she looked back and forth between the two unexplored tunnels on either side of the chamber.
But you are right. It's better to know for certain. Which tunnel do you want to look down first?
I pulled out my grandpa's old compass from a pocket in my fatigues and moved until the needle pointed north. With me standing in front of the three tunnel entrances, north pointed to the tunnels furthest to the left. The center tunnel was northeast, and the tunnel on the far right was southeast. The choice was arbitrary. Both tunnels would have to be explored eventually, so it was just a matter of where to start. Let's take a look down the right-hand side, I said as I moved forward. We don't have to spend a lot of time looking down it today, but let's just get an idea of where it goes. I led the way with my headlamp lighting up the tunnel before us, but but it looked like every other tunnel in this cave system for the most part. Some portions seemed like they'd formed naturally, while others showed tool marks on the tunnel walls. But as we continued on through this portion of the tunnels, I started to notice more and more tool marks. They must have dug out most of this section, I commented as I took a closer look at the walls. The Lost Dwarves disappeared hundreds of years ago, right? If they didn't go up to the surface, could they have lived down here?
They would have had to live somewhere.
Amrila shrugged at the edge of my vision. I tried not to look right at her, since that would put the horned woman right in the beam of light, and her eyes were still somewhat sensitive to brightness.
No one knows what happened to them.
The beautiful Zinkari continued.
They were never seen in the gloom again.
Well, let's keep going for now, I said. I'm assuming if there were still a tribe of tunnel-making dwarves living down here, we would have seen some sign of them before now. They must have either moved on or died out. Amrila and I continued to explore the tunnels, and I checked my compass to find the path moved consistently to the south. There weren't as many side passages here as there were in the other sections of the cave network I'd been in so far. We also seemed to be moving deeper underground at a steady rate, and the ground had a slight downward slope to it. These tunnels seemed to move with purpose, rather than meander like the natural ones. There were a few side chambers and passages that broke off from the main tunnel, but they were empty, and it was unclear what their purpose might have been once. Maybe storage or small living spaces, but no artifacts had been left to provide any clues. Then, I noticed notches on the walls that might have once held lanterns or torches, and the tool marks gave way to polished stone and decorative touches, like carvings that resembled pillars. The opening of side passages became more frequent, and around the openings were carved archways, while the rough ground of the natural tunnels gave way to flagstone floors.
Should we be exploring any of these?
Amrila asked as she looked through one of the archways. Let's stick to the main tunnel for now, I said as I looked around the more finished corridors of this section. We can always look around more on our way back, but if we start going down every passage we come across, this'll take forever. I think it's safe to say we found where the Lost Dwarves came to live.
These don't look like living quarters to me,
the red-skinned woman said as she touched one of the polished walls. Really? I wondered out loud. Look at all the work that went into these tunnels. They took time to make decorative carvings and lay flagstones. What else could they be?
You don't know dwarves.
Amrila laughed lightly.
You should see some of the ruins left behind by the old dwarven empire. The dwarves delight in their handiwork and put a great deal of effort into every detail. These look like service corridors to me. There are no tracks for minecarts, though, so I'm not sure what purpose they might have served.
I grunted as I looked over the walls of the corridor. Well, you gotta respect the work, I guess. Then, as I looked further down the corridor, something caught my eye. About 30 feet down the corridor, there was a sharp turn. And just at the edge of the turn, I could see a picture of some armored warriors carved into the wall. What's that? I asked as I moved to get a closer look. Amrila followed me down the corridor, and as we turned the corner, the rest of the picture came into view. A giant mural was carved into the wall in incredible detail. The left side, which I had first seen the corner of, was a wave of dwarven warriors, with their swords and crossbows raised in battle. The right side was similar, but the warriors there were night elves in their sleek leather armor. Peppered in with the night elves' army were elves holding staves topped with orbs, which were represented by smooth, colorful stones in the mural. Interestingly enough, the two armies didn't appear to be fighting each other. Both fighting forces were engaged in battle against dark, twisted beings with gaping maws, clawed hands, and curving horns. And at the center of the mural was the leader of the monstrous creatures. It was a huge, winged figure, with a grotesquely muscular body, sharp fangs and red jewels for eyes. Holy shit. I breathed as I took in the epic battle the mural depicted. What the fuck is this?
It could be one of any number of legends.
Amrila replied next to me, and she squinted her dark eyes because of her proximity to the light of the headlamp.
The gloom is full of stories like these. Ancient battles against demonic forces from the twilight region in the deeper dark. Since it's here, it might be a depiction of the final confrontation against the demon lords, when the night elves bound them to the deeper dark and banished their minions to the twilight region.
I wonder how much of these legends are true, I murmured as I examined the fine details of the mural. I know you don't believe the night elves are all that stands between the gloom and these demon lords, But this was left by the Lost Dwarves, so I doubt it's Yeni propaganda.
You'll notice it only shows the battle, though.
Amrila pointed out.
And not the binding of the Demon Lords. It could be that the demons were defeated in battle. The Lost Dwarves disappeared soon after that, supposedly, so the Yeni could have easily made up the rest to gain power. As long as the rest of the Gloom believes the Yeni tribe is all that stands between them and chaos, who would stand against them?
Fair point, I said as I turned away from the mural. Let's see what's down this corridor. If we don't find anything of interest soon, we'll double back and go home. The Zinkari woman and I continued to walk down the tunnel while still moving south until the tunnel began to get wider. The flagstones were wider here, too, and as I turned my head from side to side to look around the changing tunnel, I took another step forward, and one of the notches on the wall lit up. I blinked in the sudden light and saw a glowing amber-colored stone where I thought lanterns or torches might have been once. I took a few steps closer, and another stone further down the corridor lit up and cast a warm, dim glow down the tunnel.
Ah, thank the gods,
Amrila said.
You can turn off that infernal light on your face.
These are really cool, I said as I clicked off the headlamp. I wonder how they're powered. They're clearly motion-activated.
Motion makes them glow?
Amrila asked with a look of wonder on her pretty face.
How strange.
The horned woman moved further down the corridor to test the theory, and now that we could see more of the tunnel all at once, the details of the dwarven architecture were more apparent. What I had thought were just decorative pillars carved into the walls turned out to be structural support beams made from stone, and there were also subtle, swirling patterns polished into the walls. As Amrila walked down the corridor to see if the next ensconced stone would light up in response to her, her foot lightly touched down on a flagstone that dropped down half an inch with a strange grinding sound.
Fuck me!
The red-skinned woman spat as she tucked and rolled onto the ground with a sudden, graceful movement. Before I could ask what was happening, I watched as heavy, steel-tipped spikes shot out from hidden holes in the walls of the corridor around Amrila. My heart stopped for an instant as the agile Zinkari woman rolled and launched herself out of the way of one of the spikes, and she narrowly avoided being impaled. What the fuck? I shouted. I started to move forward, but then I thought better of it and looked down at the ground. Where Amrila had triggered the spike, the stone tile was slightly darker than the other flagstones. The difference was barely noticeable and entirely too easy to overlook. Are you okay? I called down the corridor to the horned woman.
Yeah,
Amrila replied, and she stood and brushed herself off.
Not a scratch on me.
The black-eyed woman grinned back at me, and I took a deep breath of relief. Then Amrila looked down at the ground around her for more triggers. It's the darker stones, I said as I chose my steps carefully and moved to where the long spikes still crisscrossed the corridor. I think they're pressure plates of some kind. Do you see any more where you are? I carefully climbed over the deployed spikes while I avoided their sharp tips, but I could see Amrila down the corridor looking around at the floor.
Now that you point them out,
the black-eyed woman replied,
I do see the discoloration. I should have been more cautious.
Well, who would have guessed a centuries-old booby trap would still be functional? I grunted as I pushed my way through the last of the spikes.
Dwarven engineering is a marvel.
Amrila snorted as she waited for me to join her. All right, I said as I got to the other side of the wall spikes. That was exciting, but let's not have any more of that. We'll keep a close eye out for anything that looks even slightly out of place and try to go around it. The Zinkari woman and I kept going, and we stepped around the darker flagstones and kept our eyes peeled for any new traps within hidden mechanisms. The next trap came about 100 yards down the main tunnel. A long, thin wire was stretched across the corridor, and I almost didn't see it before I walked right through it. The metal wire was about 18 inches off the ground, and it caught the light at just the right angle. If I hadn't been looking for a trap, I would have missed that too. Amrila, I said as I threw out a hand to signal for her to stop. What do you think this goes to? I pointed out the tripwire, and we both paused to look up and down the corridor for what it might trigger. Then I glanced up and saw several large rocks on a shelf, held in place by a pin connected to the other end of the wire. It was a wonder of engineering that such a small pin could hold so much weight. It had to have been designed to give way at the slightest pressure against the wire to work, and my mind tried to figure out how it was even possible and the physics that would be involved. Should we try to set it off? I asked the red-skinned woman. Or just try to move through without setting it off?
These tunnels are well made,
Amrila answered.
But even the strongest tunnels are at risk of a potential cave-in. If we set off the trap, it might end up blocking the way forward. I don't know about you, but I want to know what is so worth guarding at the end of this corridor.
All right. I agreed. I'll go first. Be ready to run the other way if anything happens. My mouth felt dry as I lifted my foot over the thin wire and gingerly stepped over it. I could almost feel the weight of the rocks propped up on the shelf overhead as I crossed under it. Each boulder had to be at least 350 pounds from the look of them, so if they fell from the shelf about 12 feet up, I would be instantly crushed. As I walked underneath the shelf, I looked around at the flagstones to make sure there wasn't a second trigger hidden somewhere, in case the first one was avoided. I didn't see one, and soon enough I was on the other side and breathed a sigh of relief. Then I turned to look at Amrila, who took a deep breath, lightly stepped over the tripwire, and hurried past the area under the rock shelf. A lifetime in caves and tunnels had clearly given her a healthy fear of being buried under fallen rocks, and once she was on the other side, the usually brave, cavalier woman was visibly pale. "Are you okay?" I asked.
"Don't want to talk about it,"
the horned woman blurted out as she rushed past me. I chuckled to myself and turned to follow the fuming Zenkari woman. The corridor finally ended in an intricately carved archway that seemed to lead into a small chamber beyond. The archway itself had the same pillar motif that had been repeated in the rest of the tunnels, but the ones on either side of this door had small, wretchedly ugly creatures carved into it that looked like they were crawling up the pillars. Once we were closer to the door, I realized the figures on either side of the archway were the same monsters from the mural, and their presence here almost felt like a warning. The two of us stopped at the threshold of the archway and peered into the long chamber beyond. On the far end was a large iron door, almost identical to the one that led to the great forest and into the gloom. Two hideous statues of gargoyle-like creatures sitting on their haunches flanked the massive door, and their eyes were made from glimmering red jewels, polished to a smooth shine. On the flagstones of the floor were strange symbols, and there was some of the ancient dwarven writing on the door. "Are these words the same as what's written on the other iron door?" I asked the lithe Zenkari woman next to me.
"No."
Amrila shook her head.
"They don't make any sense either. They say something like, 'The sharpest notes burn the ear.' I don't understand."
"Do you recognize the symbols on the floor?" I asked as I looked down. "Maybe that's a clue. Everything else has been booby-trapped leading up to this door. I suspect this room is going to be trapped too. That's got to be some kind of riddle."
"I've never seen symbols like these,"
the horned woman said before she pursed her lips.
"Maybe we can find a rock or something to throw in and see what happens."
We both looked around for any loose rocks or pebbles on the ground, but it was pretty clean, which struck me as odd since there wasn't even that much dust. "Fuck," I swore quietly, and then I pulled out the coin pouch I'd brought, which contained gold, silver, and copper coins from the gloom. "Here, we'll have to use these. They aren't very heavy, but maybe the triggers are sensitive."
"Only the copper ones,"
Amrila said as she wrinkled her brow. "We've plenty more where this came from," I snorted.
"Still?"
the red-skinned woman shrugged.
"There's no sense in wasting it."
"That's true." I chuckled as I took aim at a flagstone in the center of the room. "Be ready to jump back. Fuck knows what this trap will do." I tossed the coin, and it landed on a stone with a symbol that looked like an upside-down seven, with a little half-moon at its lower end. When the copper coin hit the stone, there was a deep, resonant tone before it bounced and landed on the stone next to it, which had a symbol that looked like lowercase a and e smushed together. As soon as the coin touched the second flagstone, a high-pitched, sharp tone echoed through the chamber, and fire erupted from the gargoyles at the end of the cavern. Then, a millisecond later, fire also shot from somewhere just on the other side of the archway from us, and Amrila and I both took an involuntary step back. Once the flames had died, the horned woman and I looked at each other and laughed, which helped to break the tension of the moment. Fucking hell, this place was ridiculous. "There must be two more of those statues just inside the archway," I said. "Those stones are pretty damn sensitive too, if they can be set off by a little penny like that."
"So,"
Amrila said as she looked at the door on the other side of the chamber.
"What do we do?"
I shrugged. "I don't mind losing a few copper pieces to satisfy my curiosity. I say we try and figure out which stones are safe to walk on through a little trial and error. I really want to know where that door leads to."
if we must.
Amrila sighed as she looked pensively at the coin bag.
But try to get them to bounce as much as you can so we lose as few coins as possible.
They're just coppers. I grinned at the frugal woman. How much can you even get for them?
A few slices of bread,
the horned woman replied with a stubborn jut of her chin.
A little cheese or a hand pie? Enough to sustain a girl in the lean times. Please, I'm so used to being poor, I just can't bear the thought of losing money.
Okay, I said as I smiled at the beautiful half-demon. I grew up poor too, I get it. I'll waste as few as possible. Then I tossed a few more copper coins, and I tried to hit a different symbol every time. I soon realized the symbols with the half-moon shapes connected to them were either major or minor sounding tones, but the ones that didn't have half-moon shapes were sharp notes, and it was the sharp tones that set off the bursts of fire. The sharp tones were the triggers. So, I said as I put the coins away, we only step on the stones with those little crescent shapes on them. And Amrila?
What?
The red-skinned woman said as she looked at me with mock innocence. Don't try to pick up any of the coppers, I said as I stared at her sternly from under my eyebrows. They're not worth it.
I won't,
the Zinkari scoffed.
Now that you told me not to.
I chuckled, turned, and started to move across the narrow chamber while only stepping on the stone tiles that had the crescent-shaped markings on them. The room filled with resonating tones, and it was almost like playing music. I felt each note in my core as they rang out, and I wondered where the sound was coming from. It almost sounded like the largest pipes of a church organ were echoing from deep in the walls, and as more tones sounded, I knew Amrila had started to follow me across the room. The sound was beautiful in the strangest way. It was like some giant creature humming a nonsense song to itself, and the melody started to lull my senses before I even realized what was happening. It must have had the same effect on Amrila too, because I heard a sudden sharp note sound behind me right before I made it to the iron door on the other side. I seemed to snap out of a haze, and I whirled around and saw Amrila had carelessly stepped on the wrong flagstone. Her eyes were dazed and glazed over in a stupor, which was somehow caused by the melodic tones of the trap, and she took another stumbling step off the safe path. Shit! Amrila! I shouted as I launched myself at the red-skinned woman and tackled her to the ground. The lengths of our bodies hitting the flagstones caused a discordant sound as several tones sounded at once. Then flames shot out from either side of the room and missed us by inches. But I could sure as fuck feel their heat over us.
What happened?
Amrila shouted over the din of the flagstones' reverberating tones. I don't know for sure, I yelled back, though her face was only a few inches away from mine on the ground. Some kind of mind-altering effect from the sound of the tiles, but it only seems to work when you're walking on the correct stones, like a second layer to the trap. We'll have to try to crawl to the door before we get baked by these flames. The flagstones were already growing hot, and both Amrila and I were sweating. The sound from us touching so many of the tiles at once was starting to feel deafening, and it made it hard to have a complete thought. Then I started to drag myself toward the door and watched as the horned woman did the same. The sweat on my palms made it difficult for me to pull myself across the floor, and with every inch we dragged ourselves, the stones were only getting hotter. The sound filling my head was now at a maddening pitch, and I started to irrationally think about standing and running out of the room. Then I recognized the thought wasn't my own, and the notes were still affecting my brain and causing intrusive thoughts.
I can't!
Amrila screamed with sweat pouring down her face and matting her strawberry blonde hair to her face and neck.
We have to run, we'll roast alive in here!
Don't listen to the music! I shouted. If you stand up and run, you'll be burned alive! It's the sounds! They're meant to drive us crazy! Just don't listen, Amrila! We're almost to the door! It felt like an eternity in the heat, and that encompassing sounds of notes all mixed together. But finally, I reached the unmarked flagstones in front of the iron door, and the din of the musical notes died down a little. I carefully reached out under the flames and grabbed the horned woman's outstretched arms. Amrila's face was twisted with the effort of shutting out the thoughts of standing up and running through the last of the flames, and I dragged the red-skinned woman the rest of the way and pulled her close to me as the hellish flames died down. We held each other for a moment and panted as the last of the echoing tones in the heat faded away. Well, I gasped as the air became cool enough to allow a full breath. That was pretty awful.
Let's get out of this horrible place.
The Zinkari woman said as she regained herself and wiped the sweat and matted hair from her face. You okay? I asked and looked deeply into Amrila's coal-black eyes.
Yes,
she said in a quiet voice as she looked back at me.
I'm just not used to glamours that play tricks with my mind.
Yeah, I nodded. That sucked pretty hard. We're going to wear our headphones if we have to go through here again. We'll turn them off so we can't hear the music. Let's get out of here. I stood, pulled out my key, and prayed it would work the same with this door. I twisted the key in the lock, and for a heart-pounding, gut-twisting second, I felt a slight resistance and feared we'd have to go back across the musical trap. But then, the rust or grime that obstructed the mechanism gave way, and the door swung slowly open. As the hinges groaned after maybe centuries of disuse, Amrila and I looked through to the darkness beyond the door. The cool air was a sweet relief, and somewhere down the rough, natural tunnel, we could see the dim blue glow of the gloom. Hell yeah!